Okay, so tonight's shiur is L'Zecher Nishmas Rav Avraham Ben Chaim, the father of Chaim Arbitzel. Tonight is the actual yahrzeit. So the Shama should have an aliyah. The Divrei Torah should be dedicated to the skus of the yahrzeit. Okay, so we began last week discussing the first topic in the parak. Once again, so the Mishnah tells us that Shnayim Hochus in the Talis, if two people are struggling over a Talis, and again, obviously the Talis is a Hechetimtzi, it's an example. It could have been any other object, although there might be a difference between an integrated Kli, what we call a Dover Mesuyam, right, which cannot be split, and a talus. It also depends what kind of, you know, talus it is. What's that? Yeah, exactly. So the question of what we mean when we talk about splitting a talus in two, I'm getting ahead of myself already, but Shai Moksum Talus, the Tzak of Yachloku, is a very important issue. The Gemara discusses it later on. In fact, I'll show you maybe very quickly where the Gemara discusses it.
We said last week you should have something
to illustrate. Yeah.
We are moving into a new technology.
So we don't have our smart board, so instead we have actually graphic illustrations here. Shai Moksum Talus. So we'll discuss that in a second. I'll just show you in a second very quickly, but it really comes up a little bit later on in the Gemara, but it's, I think, very relevant to understanding conceptually what's going on. But first, let's just get the facts out. Shnayim Hochus B'Talis, two people are struggling, competing in terms of their claims of ownership over this particular talis. Zeh Amar Ani Metzaltzia. Each one says that he found the talis. In other words, each one's claiming that this talis was Hefker. And he picked it up, but he picked it up first, and he picked it up exclusively. Zamar Kula Shuli, each one is claiming that the entire talus belongs to him. Zay Yishba Sheba Pachas Mechetzer, each one is going to take a shvua that he owns not less than 50% of the talus. As I mentioned, the Gemara discusses that interesting formulation, because why not just say each one takes a shvua about what he owns? The answer is, again, we don't want it to be evident that there's a shvuas shav or sheker, as the case may be in this particular case. So it's better, since each one's going to end up with half, that he should take a shvuah that he doesn't own less than half. That way it doesn't contradict his claim of whole, but it also doesn't force an evident sheker or shav in bezdin, which is an interesting idea. Biachloku. And then what we do is we split the talus. If the claims are somewhat different, if one fellow claims, I picked up this talus exclusively, again, the whole talus is mine. The other one says, we picked it up both at the same time. We're partners in the talus. So, the one who says that the entire talus is his, he's going to take a shua that he has not less than three quarters, and that's what he will get, as we'll see in a moment. The one who says that, who acknowledges that he's a partner and that he owns not more than, he owns 50% of them, but not more. Yishbash Ema Pachos Biravia, he will take a shua that he owns not less than a quarter. Zen El Tashlocha Shosh Chalok and Zen El Tarudi. Each one will there then accordingly be awarded, right, the amount that makes sense given this rule. Namely, the Kula Shuli will get three quarters. The other fellow will get a quarter, and as we explained last week, even though there's a bit of a chiddush in terms of the actual breakdown given the tfisa, because each one, as the Gemara says later on, the Gemara of Zion later on says that the case of the Mishnah is a case where each one is tofet bekarkashta, meaning each one, you know, is holding on to the fringes of the, since I have it here, of the talus. In other words, it's not that one fellow is holding on like this and the other one's holding like this. Right, but each one's holding on to the actual fringes. Such a nice talus, fringes of the fringes of the talus, the karkashta of the talus. So, thank you. So, since that's the case, my reputation is very, you know, extensive. That I'm very practical when I, you know, when I get to Europe, very, very always, you know, pictures and illustrations and. the board and so on. So so the point is that even though from a physical point of view, each one is holding on to the karkashta, the fringes of the talus, in both cases. So you might say, oh, well, if that constitutes, you know, a 50% tfisa in some sense, so that's true for the first case, where they split it 50%. Is that also true for the second case, where they split it 50%, where they don't split it 50%, but we make this division of three quarters and one quarter? Right? So that's a little bit of a hitch, because from a physical tfisa point of view, one could have said that the tfisa of each one is on 50%, even though the claim, right, or the dispute is only over 50% of the talus. There's an agreement by both of them that 50% is owned by Reuven. Reuven and Shimon are arguing about the other 50%. Reuven says, I own both 50%, so I own the whole thing. Shimon says, I only own 50%, but I agree that Reuven owns 50%. So the physical tfisa, if indeed that's what we have in Shimon and Batalis, is a little out of whack here with the actual tainus and the solution. So that's an issue, and that's shown in point to that. In other words, the principle, the application of the ratio to the Seifa is that the dispute legally isn't about the whole talus, it's about half the talus. Right? And since about half the talus, so we're applying the same rule, namely half of what each one claims, you know, will be given, will be awarded to each. So that's why it's three quarters and a quarter. I'm just pointing out that the physical aspect of it is a bit of a chiddush. Especially, that's Tosafos' question. If you want to look for 1 second, I hope we'll get back to it, if not today, then certainly going forward. But the Bali Tosafos asked this very, very famous question, and that is, in the case where one man says three quarters and the other man says a quarter, why don't you say that you should believe the man who says, one man says half, the other one says whole, but we give three quarters and a quarter, why not believe the man who says half, right? Migu, that he could have said whole. Right, that's the famous question that Tosafos said. If you look here at Tosafos, the Zen Noto Rabia. Tosafos says, Vim Tomar, Yehe Naman, Kechetzio, Shomo, Migu, Dibayomar, Kula Shali. Right, because Amr Begumara, the Gemara that he quotes Shali for the moment. But the idea is that that's what Migu. Migu is the concept that we will sometimes believe someone, right, if his claim is particularly credible. And one of the things that might make his claim particularly credible is the fact that if he was a liar, right, he has a much more effective lie. So by, you know, opting seemingly to tell the truth, how do we know it's the truth? That's the whole issue, whether it's the truth. By opting for a lesser claim, and unless he's just, you know, strategizing. Well, but the point is that his strategy isn't, if his strategy is superior to his alternative claim, then we usually don't say me. But the point here is that it's not. In other words, let's say he's a liar, right? If he's a liar, so he could lie in two different ways. Right? But one lie will, you know, doesn't require the need for any extra credibility. So the safer lie is to say, you know, unless you know the halakha already, and the halakha is different. Right, but there's no upside to it, is what I'm saying. In other words, when I say, if I'm a liar and I don't have any part of the talus, which is what Reuven says, that Shimon has nothing in the talus. Shimon says, I have half. So if Shimon is a liar, he could lie in two ways. He could lie by saying the whole talus is mine, and then he'll get half because that's the tzak. Or he could lie by saying, you know, half of the talus is mine, and then what? There's no benefit for him to say that half is his. Right? Either way, he's a liar. But he has an easier lie. He has a lie which works with the standard psak of 50-50. So the point is that there is no downside, you know, to the alternative taina that he, in fact, is an upside to that taina. Now, in a situation where there's a downside, or where it's complex, let's say there's some benefit to taina number one, and there's some other benefit to taina number two, right? then it gets more complicated. And you might say, oh, well, and which one is a, you know, preferred, you know, overall? Or maybe they're preferable in different ways. Maybe in one case it's psychologically, you know, more difficult to stare the person in the eye and to do a favor or to stare him in the eye at all and lie to him. Maybe that's, you know, that counts for something too. Not all liars are brazen liars, right? So, like, there's a lot of psychology, you know, involved in the world of Migu, and there's also a question how Migu really works.
And we discussed that. Migu will work here because he is Ohez, and that supports the Migu.
Well, the Migu, that doesn't, it supports the claim, the alternative, kind of. Now, if he had said, Kula Shali, and because he's Ohez, he would have gotten 50%. So that's opposed to saying, well, if he gets 50%, had he been a liar and claimed the whole thing, since he's Ohez, why not believe him when he says that he owns 50%? Because if he's a liar, he has a better lie, or an equivalent lie, but it's a little bit of a better lie in a way. So that's Tosfos' question. Tell me, Yehneman, Chetzi Shalo, Migu Dibai Amar Kula Shali, Kanani Migamara. One second. So I just want to read the answer to Tosfos for a second, and I'll get back to this later. But Umatharish, Rivam gives the answer, famous answer of the Rivam. The Migu Lahotzi Lo Minam. The Bechetzu Hasheni, Muchzak Zeh, Kemo Zeh. Ah, that's tricky. What does that even mean? Right, so there's a Machlokas Rishonim. The Balei Tosfos throughout Shas are of the opinion. I'm not saying there are no exceptions, but the consensus view of the Balei Tosfos generally is that Migu Lahakzik Komina, Migu Lahotzi Lomina. What that means is that this is the mechanism. Right, of Migu is something which will allow you to, you know, retain the status quo. Bahaxik. But we don't put enough faith in the Migu that it can also change the status quo, that it can be motzi mamo. In general, as we know, ain hochem b'mamon acharov, there are different levels of evidence out there in the world of halacha. Some of which have the capacity, some of which are believed under all conditions, like Eidos. You know, others, even short of Eidos, maybe, are Neman Lahotzi Mamon, to change status quo in a monetary way. And others just to support the status quo and make sure that that's, if the other person has a claim that normally would win, but you want to be Machzik, then, so the view of the Balei Tosfos is that Migu Lahotzi Lo Rinan, we don't say Migu to be motzi mamon, we only say migu lahaksik mamon. The Ramban and many of the Chachmei Svarad, who are influenced by the Ramban, strongly disagree. They think if you say migu, then you say migu lahotzi too. Why not? If migu has a certain effectiveness, then that effectiveness extends not only to maintaining status quo, but also to being motzi mamon. But what the reason I'm quoting this now and here, and I'll get back to it, is because. Let's assume for the moment Tosfos' view, the Rivam's view, which is the Migu Lahotzi Lo Amrina. Fine. Is this really Migu Lahotzi? Meaning, let's remember what the case is. The case is this man, each one's holding on the fringes, and he's claiming not the whole talus, he's claiming half the talus. Right? Now, in the end of the day, right, he's admitting that the other fellow owns half the talus, but in terms of the physical pisa, no one is tofes in this talus any more than the other one. They're both holding on to the fringes. Right. So the Balei Tosfos' kiddush, I'd say, you know, here is that not only does the taina, right, redefine the tfisa, right, because since he's only claiming half, therefore the din Torah is only on half. So we now view the half in which there's no dispute as being fully in the physical possession of Ruvain, let's say, and the other half, which is disputed, that is shared between Ruvain and Shimon to such an extent that the effort to get more than a quarter, which is half of the half, would be considered lahotzi. Some of the other Rishonim disagree for exactly that reason. Now, the Tosfos Rid and also Gilyon and Shitim and Kubetzes, they disagree for exactly, there are many reasons to disagree with this Tosfos. If you hold like Ramban and Migul Mahotzi Amrinan, that's one reason to disagree. If you hold a certain thing about Shnai Moksa, which we'll get to in general, which is our main discussion for today, there's another reason to disagree. But a third reason, we'll discuss that in a minute, but a third reason to disagree is to say that, you know, in this particular case, even though the tainas, the claims and counterclaims, really establish that the Din Torah is about half the talis, not the whole talis, but in terms of the question of lahotzi and lahaksik, what is considered lahotzi, that should still theoretically be defined by the physical tisa. So each one's holding half. It's true that he's not going to collect half for that reason alone, since he's only claiming half. But you still might say that it's not lahotzi, right? He's holding this karkashta and he's holding this karkashta. So physically, they, you know, each one is as much control as the other over the beged. He only wants half, and we have a good reason to believe him now because he has a migu, and that Tosa says it's migu lahotzi. So you see, from the Bali Tosa is that we are applying the rule of the resha to the seifa, and we are redefining even how we look at the physical tisa in light of the tainus. And that's a chiddush, but that's a chiddush of the mission. Yeah.
We a long time ago discussed
Migui,
most of which I've forgotten.
Probably discussed this about them, especially. When we get back to Tosis, the other part of it we'll talk.
But the
question is, should we believe you when you say that you forgot? You could have said that you remembered, and.
In this case here, there's no possibility of a counterclaim that would be superior.
What do you mean,
right? Because Ruben cannot say more than Kuloshari. So
that's never a problem. The issue of Migu is never about the counterclaim. It's always about the claim. It's a claim and an alternative claim. It always focuses on the, you know, the person with Migu. The idea of Migu is that, you know, let's consider this man's alternatives,
yes,
and let's see whether or not, or whatever, whether Kazaka or not Kazaka, we're talking about one man, and we're assessing his claim in the light of his alternatives, of the alternatives that he faces. And we're trying to, if it's a credibility issue, not everybody agrees it's a credibility issue, but if it's a credibility issue, which is the easiest way to understand it, then the point is, given the alternatives, the reasonable alternatives, the attractive alternative, let's say, that he has. Sometimes the assessment isn't an attractive alternative. Like I said before, sometimes it's a little more complicated. You know, maybe psychologically, no, but, you know, financially, yes. How much weight do you give to those factors? Right? But the point is that we're always assessing his alternatives in an effort to determine
his
credibility. And you know, and whether we should give him extra nemanos, because obviously he's established himself as an honest man by choosing a less beneficial path, you know, which we only understand he would do because because of his honesty. Once he's honest, let's give him, you know, a little bit of extra and I'm honest.
But it implicitly assumes that there's something less than full integrity on the other side.
No, not really. I mean,
you're saying he's more honest. Implicitly, you're saying he's more honest.
Well, put it this way, he has a reason. Because he had an easier or alternative, so there's more reason to add credibility to him. It's not so much that the other fellow's claim is fraudulent or problematic, but, you know, we're treating him like any claim, and here this fellow seems to have added credibility. So it's not so much, you know, a derogation of Reuven. Not really, it isn't. It isn't. It's just that, you know, so that's what you might say. Oh, lehotzi. That might be one of the reasons you want to say that Migul lehotzi lo amrina. Because you might say, well, there's nothing wrong. The other fellow is kashrus. Kashrus. Why should we be taking something away from him? In other words, so you might say, oh, to preserve the status quo, I might be willing to accord extra credibility, even though implicitly his extra credibility is casting aspersions on the other fellow's cheskes kasher. But it doesn't flow from that. That's the consequence, let's say. Yeah.
Let's go back to the same question on a shavua, you can make a shavua on facts.
Right.
If he says Chesi Shali, that may be based, that's a conclusion
know, that it may be Bezin's decision how to paskin, but in every din Torah, there's a claim and a counterclaim. The claim and the counterclaim are very important. The Rambam deals with these dinim in Sefer Mishpatim. In which halachos in Sefer Mishpatim? Yeah, let me end the Rambam. Thank you. I would feel more confident. Well, where does the Rambam deal with these dinim? In a section called the Toin Benita. Right? So, what does Toin Benita mean? Claim and counterclaim. There's always, every din Torah revolves around the credibility of the Tainas. Now again, in most Dine Torah, what happens is, you know, and this gets us back to, indeed, to your question of last week, which I think is where we left off. Just to, before we get to, you know, to your question of last week and to that point, so let me just, you know, remind everybody what we did basically last week. So we read a Mishnah, and we also noted that there are two basic themes, two basic topics to pursue in the context of the Mishnah. One is a broader theme of dispute resolution. And we'll get back to that maybe later, but that's just to put this in context. Toin Benita, that's also part of Toin Benita. Meaning, you have a claim and counterclaim. In most Dine Torah, when you have a claim and counterclaim, there's a very clear mechanism to break the deadlock. Right? One claim is Alpidin, halachically viewed to be superior to the other. There's Amigu, there's some other benefit. One is a motzi, the other is a motzi. This already is part of your last week's question, right? There's a matter of status quo. It always takes more to change the status quo than to maintain the status quo. That's chazak and tfisa. Or, even better, right, there are evidentiary, factors. The best you can ever get, edus. Right? If you have Aiden, then you're in the driver's seat. And even in absence of edus, then you have to figure out what works for Hasik and what works for Hotzi. But things like chazakas and robes and maybe migos, depending on how effective they are. These are part of the laws of evidence, right, that determine, how to break a deadlock in the world of halach. Question is, if you can't break the deadlock, because you have a Toin and a Nitan, and the objective quality of the Tainos is roughly the same. And there is no Aedus, or there's contradictory Aedus. Tray leads you deadlocked. And there's a Rove, or Rove is ineffective for some reason. So what happens in a situation where you just don't know what to do? So what we discussed last week is that in the halachic world, there are, I wouldn't say a myriad, because that makes it sound like too many, but there's quite a range of methods of breaking deadlocks and solving such cases where there's no raya, or where there's no ability to, to objectively determine, who should get the object. One is our Mishnah, Yachloku. And we actually find Yachloku in three different contexts. Shrine Oaks of Batalis, Yachloku, right here. Momon Hamutal B'Safek, which we'll get back to, the Din of Sumchas, right? Which is, when you don't know what happened, again, there are different circumstances there too. But hopefully the simple case, the Mishnah Daf Kuf Amud Aleph, Hamachid Par of a Kamar, right? A man exchanges one animal for another, and the mechanism of exchange is that when you do a Mashiach on one, right, the other automatically triggers the other becoming part of your, part of the other fellow's, property, but you're not there. No one's there to see. Let's say, we're talking about far-flung distances, or if this happens, no one's there to see. Let's say the para gets a mashiach, and the chamar is now going to be exchanged for it, and the chamar is pregnant and gives birth. Right? And no one saw the moment of birth. So there's a kind of an objective, suffix, whether or not this blood was born, right before or right after the transaction took place. No one witnessed the transaction. That's called Mamon. Or you have another case, the case in Bava Kama, Mambab, an animal gores another animal, attacks another animal, that other animal is pregnant, right, and they find the ubar, the blood, also dead. And the question is, no one saw that part of it. He died from the injuries. Let's say the autopsy is inconclusive. So you can't figure out exactly whether or not this is just a coincidence or this is part of the attack. Can you put it on the bill of the mazik or not? But and you can definitely see where this, you know, where this question comes from. As I say, it's a dror, what we call a dror de mamona case. Dror de mamona, according to Bali Tosis, means ship a low time of sayim, the esophic lebasta. Sometimes, you know, we don't know that there's a dispute unless people, you know, emphatically make their claims and their counterclaims. They go to court and then they say what they otherwise, they're Reuven and Shimon. Right? Other times, we don't need the claim and counterclaim to understand where this dispute comes from. That's Sumkas. Sumkas says, Mamon Amuzu Besafak Kolkin, Yachoku. The Chachamim say, if there is any kind of Muksakul, if there's any status quo here, in terms of where the animal is, or who used to be the owner of the animal, that's called Marakama. The din is, Hazuna Basar, we say, Motsu Mechabel of Arai. You go by the Chazak. That's a different model of Yachoku. Well, that's the question. How is it? That's the third case of Yachoku. The Gemara that we talked about in Malmasra. A man sold his field or gave his field as matana to two different people on the same day. And he wrote a contract which didn't have hours in it, right? Only worked on the basis of days. So the contract kicks in right at the last second of that day. It says, on Tuesday, I hereby sell my field. Wrote two different stars, one to Reuven, one to Shimon. Obviously, this is something problematic about this man's behavior, but he did it. He owned the field and he sold it to two different people at the same time. So Rav says Yachloku. So even in the world of Yachloku, there are three cases of Yachloku. You have to figure out if they're the same or not. Then there's something called Shuda Dedaya. Right, in that same case of Shnei Shnoros Yotzim Yomechad, so Shmuel says you don't split the property. The Bezdin, the Dayanim, right, are charged with making the decision. And I intentionally formulated it that way, because the debate among the Rishonim, what do you mean intentionally charged with making the decision? Meaning they're trying to read the mind of, they're trying to, you know, their best guess or their instinct. That's what we're talking about. That's Kiddush that we allow that, because it isn't, that's far from objective proof. He knew this fellow, he was always inclined to him, you know, etc., etc. Or is it even more arbitrary than that, just that they don't get to choose A or B? What would that be based on? That keeps from that focus between Rashi and Tosis in different places. That's a totally different kind of solution than Yachloku. Right? One man's going to get everything, and based on the decision of the Dayanim, right, based on exactly what? Then we have Kol Dalem Gavar, which we discussed, and we're going to get back to today. Kol Dalem Gavar says, Bezdin lets them fight it out. Now, is that might makes right, or might proves right, or is it really just a way of saying that, you know, Bezdin we have to protect the integrity and therefore the stature, the reputation of Bezdin. And therefore, in certain situations, it's better that they withdraw and not take part in the decision. And, you know, what does that mean? What it means sometimes is they look the other way and the matter gets solved. Now, is there any element of Birur in that? That's the argument of the Rush. The Rush is an element of Birur. We'll talk about this more fully. But you can understand very well that Kol Dalem Gavar, according to some Rishonim, is a siluk. Siluk means that their Bezdin is just, you know, withdrawing. Others see it as a, you know, kind of a quasi-birur, right? We discussed it last time. Like somebody's going to be more tenacious. You know, if it's his, he's not giving up. He's going to be relentless, right? If it's a lark, you know, I'm going to try to take this guy as an object. But, you know, if he fights me too much, it's not worth it for me. But to keep my object, right, that's already... That, you know, kind of triggers, you know, a superhuman, you know, defensive, you know, posture. That's the Rosh's idea. But you can understand that Kol Dalem Gavar, very different than Yachloku. Then there's Yehimunach HaChayavu Aliyahu, right, which is the case of what we call Manu Shlishi, Rav Yossi and the Chachamim, right? That's the case of two men deposited with a third man. One gave $200 deposit, the other one gave $100 deposit. Then when it comes time to collect, each one, Reuven and Shimon, deposited $100 and $200, 100, then 200 with Levy. Now they come to Levy. Levy didn't keep records. Levy's records were burnt, whatever it is. Right? Maybe lost in the cloud. So the point is that Levy, through no fault of his own, doesn't know by who gave him the 200, who gave him. He can't identify which. So Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that all 300 are kept in abeyance. Atshu Yavo Elio. In Cain, because you don't do that, Mahis Sidaramai. That's a deterrent. It's a knas. Right? We're not going to let the guilty part, we don't want to encourage this kind of behavior, and we don't want to reward this kind of behavior. Those might be two different points also. Well, obviously they're interconnected. The Chachamim, who we passed by, that's too harsh. We understand, you know, how that helps in terms of deterrent and knas, but it certainly comes at a very heavy price that is borne by the innocent party. Not only does he not get his 200, he doesn't even get his 100. So they say, Manushlishi, each one gets 100, because that's not the dispute. And the Din Torah is really on the 100. There are two issues here. There's a policy issue, and there's also possibly a legal conceptual issue. The policy issue is, do you prefer deterrence and preventing the chote from being niskar, even at the expense of the plight of the innocent party, the greater loss of the innocent party? That's one issue. It's also a legal, conceptual issue. That is there a din Torah about 300 here, or is there a din Torah about 100? Legally, informally, right? Everybody agrees that each one has 100. So if you have the right to hold back, there's no din Torah on the 100. It's like I said about the Shnayim Melachim of the palace, Echad Omer Kula Shelim, Echad Omer Chetzi Shelim, right? The real din Torah, that's how Tosafot Rashi explains it. The real din Torah is about the 50, about the half. It's not about the whole anymore. It's 50% of the 50%, which is 25%. Here too. So the Chacham say, the Mana Shlishi, a third, the disputed 100, Yehi Munach, Achiyavo, Eliyah. The point is, just the briefer part of the story is, we find different solutions to the problem of deadlock when there's no raya or taina ability to make the decision. What I explained last time was that, we could look at this, one way to look at this is to say, well, there are different factors that dictate when we say each of these, and there are, and that's what the Gemara. This is not my question. This is Tosafot asked the question about the relationship between Yachloku and Kol Da'on Gavar, as we're going to read in just a minute. Tosafot here, Tosafot Bambasra, earlier Ben Hananel, all the Rishonim have that question. The Gemara already asks the question about the Nanos, about Yehemurach Hachiyav Aliyahu, right? About in Bambasra, the Gemara asks, how come sometimes we say Kol Da'on Gavar, and sometimes we say Shuda D'Daina or Yachloku? The Gemara is asking these questions. So at the end of the day, what you might say is, there are very subtle forces at work here. Each one is justified in its own terms. And that very well might be the answer. In addition to that, or instead of that, in some cases, right, it might be possible to pin down, according to various Rishonim, what is a preferred solution? What is a default preferred solution in the philosophy of the halacha, let's say? And even though that isn't followed in all cases, because sometimes the price that you pay is doesn't justify it, the point is there is a preference. You have this with regard to Kol Da'on Gavar, Yachloku, in the way that some Rishonim ask the question and how they deal with the question. Would you prefer to say Kol Da'on Gavar if you could, because it protects Beis Din in a situation where they cannot be decisive? Because they can't be Yorid Le'omek HaDavar. There's no way to break the deadlock. We'd always prefer to say Kol Da'on, but you can't say Kol Da'on Gavar if two people are holding on to something. What are you going to do? Confiscate it from them and then say, now it's open season? Maybe you can't do that. But halachically, obviously, right? Maybe the Siluk or the Birur of Kol Da'on Gavar is a preferred, or is it the opposite? You always want to say a cloak. That's a civilized, response. Kol Da'on Gavar is always, even if you want to put a good face on it, like the Rush does, and I think the good face that the Rush puts on it, as we'll discuss, is necessary to justify when it's applied. But when it's applied, that's an important factor to consider, namely that it isn't completely arbitrary, that it isn't completely, you know, law of the jungle. It isn't completely chaotic. There's a rhyme and reason to think that in most cases it's going to come out good. That's important to know. However, we always prefer a solution to a siluk. We'd always prefer a Bez Din sponsored solution to a siluk. And we'd always prefer to limit at least the loss of each individual, even if that comes at the expense of ensuring that the real party is not going to get total satisfaction. Maybe limiting losses is more important than shooting for, you know, some solution that may be ideal, but is more than likely, you know, going to be unjust. So this is one whole theme and topic. Yeah.
And yet, in Cheskas Avotim, you have a squatter who cannot produce a Kenyan from the Morakama.
Right.
And yet, winner takes all.
But that, okay, but again, this is your question. So that's,
yeah,
that's now we've gotten up to your question. The answer is, because in Cheskas Abatim,
you remember his
name. No, it's good. The Karka of Cheskas Abatim, after 3 years,
right,
for whatever reason, I don't want to go through the whole Cheskas Abatim again, but according to the Ritva in Cheskas Abatim, the Ritva will tell you, you know what, from the very minute that this person has been living in the Gulag, he has to have a time. I mean, when people say the halacha believes, you know, possession is 9/10 of the law or something like that, it's not accurate. Meaning, chazaka, kol chazaka, that's a Mishnah in Cheskas Abatim. Kol chazaka sheni mataina, in a chazaka. Meaning, you have to be claiming that this is yours. The claim that no one has bothered me, you know, for 50 years, and is irrelevant. Because if you don't claim that you bought, that you own the property, and somebody else claims that they do own the property, he's going to win every single time. But if you have a taina, so now the question is, how do we break the deadlock? There's a marakama who can prove that he used to own it. There's a machzik who's claiming that he owns it now, as of a few years ago, that he bought it from you. Correct? Or he bought it from the owner. So how do you break the deadlock? The answer is, so one view, the Ritva's view is, the second that you are machzik in the karka, you're a tofes. And that changes the status quo. It's you have possession, right? And a claim. That puts you in the driver's seat. Why do you need to wait 3 years? According to the Ritva, the answer is, Gimel, Shanim, Mizdair, Inish, Vishara, right? But more than Gimel, meaning, for 3 years, the fact that you can't produce a contract is damaging to your credibility and your business. Because people hold on to contracts for at least 3 years. Especially in real estate. Right? So that held up your... So if you can't produce a star, even if you've been in the karka, until 3 years, the 3 years is to neutralize the problematic development that you can't produce your star machine. But according to the Ritva, otherwise, see, so. Like in Metalka, let's say Metalka, let's forget about Karka. What's the rule, and that's going to be, that's our issue now. What's the rule of Metalka, all things being equal, regular Metalka? Chazaka? Kol Masitachas Yad or Reu Shalom. If I'm holding on to a watch, you know, or a pen, or any piece of Metalka in mobilia, and I'm claiming that I bought it, right, that I own it, right, then the Mukzakos, the status quo is mine. You have to prove that I'm lying. That's not a deadlock. Now, there are other ways to explain the Cheskas Gimel Shanim of Karka. If you say that there's no such thing as piece of a Karka, because Karka is bigger than we are, we don't put it in our pocket, we don't hold Karka, right? So there's no tefisa in Karka. So what is the Gimel Shanim doing? So that's the other views in the Rishonim, how they read the Gemara. If a man is in Karka for 3 years, he's in your possession, and you know about it, and you didn't make a peep, you didn't dispute his right to be there for 3 whole years. How likely is it that you're the real owner? Right? That's another, we call that riot status. And so on. But the point I'm saying, the brief point is, without going into all the details, is that there's a winner in those cases. because even though the Tainas are not demonstrable, right, by Edim, there is operating a status quo. Or, right, so this, the problem in Shnei Mosim Palace is that even there you have a deadlock. Because you have two people holding on to the karkashta of this talus. So if you ask yourself, who's the muksak? Right, who's the muksak?
They're both.
Both? Neither? But whatever it is, not one more than the other, that's the problem. And that's the problem in the other cases as well. The problem of Kol Dalam Gavar is a boat. Right, we're going to look at that case in just a minute again. Hahu Arva, the Minsoalei Beitre, there's a boat in the harbor. They're arguing about who owns the boat. Right, the boat is in no one's pocket. It's in the harbor. Right? There's no evidence that one owns it more than the other. Each one is claiming that he owns it. Yourself. Shnei Shtaros HaYotzim B'Yom Echad. Right? We know the previous. Reuven owned the property. There's no dispute about that. But he sold it to Shimon HaLevi on the same day, at the same moment. The Bechira kicked in the last second of the day simultaneously for both of them. Is one of them more books up than the other? Does one of them have a stronger claim than the other? Does one of them have Aegis more than the other? Not at all. Right? Momena Mutab Safe Kalkin. Same. There's a little bit of books up. That's the question. There, especially, let's say there's a Marakama. Right? A Machlit Para B'Chamor. One man owns the Para, the other one owns the Chamor. The Chamor gave birth, we don't know when it gave birth. Or one man's para attacked another man's para. And there's a blood, there's an ubar, you know, bitzvido. And we don't know whether or not the child just, you know, was stillborn or was a cause of the, it was also, result of the attack. Right? So there is a marakama. Right? But, because it's kind of an objective suffix, it's a dror de mamona, so the Chachamim say we don't care. Chachamim say there's a marakama, there's a motzim mechamer levaraya. This is not comparable to those other cases. They don't think it's chalkin. They think it's motzim mechamer levaraya. That's a psak in Baba Kama. That's in fact the whole concept which everybody knows of a motzim mechamer levaraya. Everybody knows that phrase, right? If you want to change the status quo, motzim mechamero, if you want to take something from your friend, olivaraya, the burden of proof is on you. That phrase comes from Bava Kama Memba, from the sugya of Sumchus and the Chachonim. That's what the Gemara says to the Minayan. How do you know motzim mechamero olivaraya? And the Gemara quotes first the pasuk. Then the Gemara says you don't even need a pasuk. It's a svarahu. It's logical. If you want to change the status quo, then you have the burden of proof. Where did that come from? That case. Sumchus says, the Chiddush is Sumchus. Sumchus says, since it's true there's a status quo. But the status quo has been, the relevance of the status quo in a way, has been usurped by developments on the ground. Meaning, okay, good, everybody knows that the previous owner was the Baal HaChamor. But since that doesn't change the reality, this becomes very important to our discussion. This doesn't change the reality, right? That there have been subsequent developments that are going to be determining what happened here. In other words, a change in ownership of the Chamor took place. It took place around the time that the Vlad, you know, surfaced in the world. And the real question now is not who used to own the property, but was this Vlad alive, prior to or subsequent to that moment? So Sumchus is basically telling you this is an exception to the rule of Moshe Mechmer Levaraya because that has been rendered superfluous in this case in terms of its relevance. It's a status quo ante. Right, but mostly informally and in name only, not in its relevance to anything that's happening here. But in almost every other one of these cases, except for some kuds, the problem is you don't have a clear mosuk. And that's the problem of shai mosuk and the talis. Shai mosuk and talis, each one's holding one, and the question is what's happening.
Would this relate to the problem of a chazak and a mikora and a chazak and a hashto?
Not really. I mean, you know about Sumchas and the Chachamim or in general? Sumchas and the Chachamim, maybe. The Kutz HaSpekos, that's the brother of Iksos, famously, in Klal Beis of Kutz HaSpekos, so raises the question whether or not Cheskas Marakama, when there's no physical Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, is more like Chazaka de Miyukara in Isurin. Meaning, a regular case of Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, the object is physically in the possession of one of the people. In the case of Sumchus, in some of the cases, the Gemara says, well, the animal's in an agam. You know, it's like a neutral territory. So, then you don't have physical Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, but you still have Marakama. You still know who the old owner was. So the Kutz HaSekos raises this question. He says, is Marakama also Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, which is kind of how the Gemara formulates in Daf Kuf in Bat Metzia? Or is it a different kind of a chazaka, like the chazaka we have in Isurim, chazaka de Miikara? Is that what used to be? Not what is until you prove otherwise. We acknowledge that there's been a change. That chazaka de Miikara means, you know, the mikvah was nimdad, the nimsachasa. The old, you know, well, last week when they checked the mikvah, it was fine. Right? And now they checked it again and it's chasa. So when you can say, Avlina and Gosa, chazaka de Miikara, right, or chazaka the hashta. Do you say, oh, as it is now, that's what it has been until the last time it's checked? Or do you say, as it was the last time it was checked, we assume that it continued to be until we knew it changed, which is right now. It changed al-pidin a second ago, or it changed the second after the previous check. So that is more kama like that, the Kutz HaSpekos' question, and he has some nafkamina. It's very important. But if, in that sense, it could be like Marakam. Okay. So let's get back to our issue. So classical Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, let me say two things about it, is a case where there's physical tfisa. One side has physical tfisa, number one. And we even find that it has a kind of triple formulation and a triple significance. Number one is Motzim Mechavar Levaraya. Kishmo Kenu. That's the most famous phrase that we use in Dinei Mamonos to say status quo. Right? If you want to remove it from its present situation, all of a riot. The burden is on you, you know, to prove, to justify, you know, initiating the change. Right? Sometimes we find that the Gemara uses the expression Tisa or whatever, and they don't call it Motzim Mechavar Levaraya. Like we said before, Chazaka Kol Masha Tachas Yad Adam Harei Shalom. Right? The Chazaka Kol Masha Tachas Yad Adam Harei Shalom is Motzim Mechavar Levaraya. Right? But it's a different terminology, and sometimes we find a third phrase, and that is Achzuke, when it comes to Tfisas Metalklin, Achzuke Inshi Begazla, this is Gemara in Shavuos, not Mevavad Beis, Achzuke Inshi Begazla Nusa Lo Mechazkina. We don't presume that people are thieves. Therefore, if a man, you know, has a watch in his hand or a bottle in his hand or whatever it is, the presumption is that he didn't steal it. Now, those are really three different emphases, right? The Dinei Motzim Mechavar Levaraya, the Pashtus, is about evidence and initiative. Basically, it says, like we said before, if you want to change the status quo, then the burden of proof is on you. It's up to you to prove, to justify a change. It's the law of inertia, right? Things are going to stay, right, as they have been, right, until you can justify change. That's about burden of proof. That statement per se says nothing about the likelihood that the status quo is true. Maybe there's no greater likelihood that the status quo is true. But simply to initiate change, right, requires some sort of evidence. The statement Chazaka Kol Ma Shetachas Yad Adam Arei Shalom, on the other hand, and the statement Atzuke Inchi Begazlunusa Lo Mechazkinan, they both refer to an effort in a way to reconstruct what it is that took place and to assess whether or not the status quo isn't authentic and the most, you know, likely scenario. When I say Atzuke Inchi Begazlunusa Lo Mechazkinan, right, what I'm really saying is that we don't think that people are thieves, and therefore if somebody has something that is rishus, the likelihood is that he is the owner. When we say chazaka kol mashatachas adam arei shalom, we're saying not only is it, you know, probable they didn't steal the object, we're also saying something else. We're saying tfisa is a relationship, is a legal connection with an object, and that legal connection, in absence of any other evidence, right, creates rights. That's not the same as saying chazaka she'eti, because there's a taina here. It's not chazaka she'eti, but taina. Right. So what I'm suggesting is as follows. There can be cases in tfisa, before we get to Shnayim Olsen, which we're about to come to in a second, there can be cases in tfisa where you have one or two, but not all three of these factors. There can be cases in tfisa where some of these factors, even if they exist, are diluted. What do I mean? Let me give you a very simple example. A second ago we spoke about marakama. Right? Let's say you have a marakama without a physical tefillah. Right? So as I mentioned, the kudus hasveik of what is marakama means, we know who the old owner is. The last time we knew of a definitive owner, it was Reuven. But right now the object is not in Reuven's domain, just as it's not in Shimon's domain. It's in a neutral domain. How much does previous ownership count for when the object is no longer in the rishus of that previous owner? Right? The truth is, on all three of these levels, right, there's no Aksuke Inshin Begazalus Alom Bechazkinan. It's in a neutral territory. Burden of proof? Interesting question. It exists a little bit, but certainly in diluted fashion, because we're not talking about an initiative to change the physical presence of the object, right? The object's right now in neutral territory. Now we're talking about legal change. We last owner that we know of is Reuven. Does that count for anything in terms of status quo and initiating change? Probably, but certainly not for as much as the object being in his rishus to say, leave me alone. You're not taking my object from my property without evidence. We're not asking to take anything. Right? Now, in terms of raya, let's say the rule of the world is that let's say the law of inertia isn't just about evidence, but let's say to some extent it's about reconstruction. Also, in most cases, things didn't change, right? There is a certain greater presumption, right, to the status quo. If I know that he's the old owner, and now there's a dispute whether there's a new owner, you know, I don't know what the percentages are, but the fact that he's a bona fide, for sure, he was the owner until X in time, probably makes it a little more likely that he's the owner.
Well, what's the case? You're giving us only half the case.
What do you mean?
What's the claim against this? What's the claim?
I bought it from you. It's now in a neutral territory.
What does that mean, neutral territory?
I'm sorry? Not in the physical domain of either. It's the symptom. Or it could be the case of Sumkus. Look at the case of Sumkus very quickly. Kufamid Aleph. Here's all background, and then you'll see how it flows into our Hamachlit para b'chamor. Here, except again, here the problem is that it's not necessarily bari, but hamachlit para b'chamor. This is the Mishnah. You exchange a donkey for a cow. doesn't matter, right? So Beyolda, the one that you're not watching, right? They're in two different places, Reuven's barn and Shimon's barn. Everybody has a big, you know, it's acres and acres and acres. Maybe they're in different states, I don't know, whatever. So no one's watching. And Yolda ben, Beyolda, the Chena Mokra Shivkasa Beyolda, Zelmer Ad Shalom Akarti, Zelmer Mishal Akachti, Yachloku. That's Sumchas. This is the Mishnah says. This is Sumchas's Psak, Yachloku. Okay? That's the case. Look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, Amai Yachloku. Why is he Yachloku here? Belexi Bershus Man, the man, Kaimbo, the Levi Idakamotu Mechavero, the Varaya. Right? It's in the barn. Shimon used to own the Chamor. Shimon now bought the Para. We're not sure whether Shimon, you know, who this Vlad was born in his barn. We're just not sure whether it was born before or after. He sold the animal. But it's in his barn. So the Lexi, Bishus, Deman, Kaimba, will have the Chamor, the Chamor, the Varaya. Now let me ask you, if there's a 50-50 chance, and there probably is, no, that this, let's say, the forensic evidence, that if you examine the blood, there's a 50-50 chance that it was born before or after, let's say. And the Gemara has a debate whether it's Shema Vashema or Bari Ubari. Fine, well, let's leave that aside for the moment. There's a 50-50 chance. So, is Moshe Mecharela Varaya going to help you here? The answer is, from one point of view, yes, and from another point of view, not. Meaning, from the perspective of, isn't it usually true that if something's in your reshus, that it's yours, is it more likely, is it at least a 60 or 55%? I don't know what the percentage, it doesn't matter to me. Is it a little more percentage usually? Is there usually that aspect? Yes. Is there this case? No. So here, but is there a burden of evidence and proof? You want to take my, you know, Chamor Jr., you want to take him out of my barn? Right? Then you have to prove that he belongs in your barn. Is there a presumption? Is there a burden of evidence? That maybe. Now let's can look further. The Gemara thought it's a winning taina originally for Sumchas. This is the debate of the Rishonim the Halacha. Is Sumchas Halacha only in Bomedes Ba'adam? That's Tosus here in Bavim Mitzia, Kufam Aleph against Tosus Bavakama, Daf Nemba. That's not for now, but that's, you should just know. Anyways, the point is that, what does the Gemara say? You're right! If he, even though it's a 50-50 proposition, from a Raya point of view, you've neutralized Moshe Mechaber of a Raya. But from a burden of evidence, you want to change the status quo? You want to take him out of my barn? Prove it. So the Gemara, at this point, the Gemara is saying that still applies. So the Gemara says, so what's the case? What's Hometz Ha'agam? It's a neutral territory. It's not in the Rishus of Reuven, it's not in the Rishus of Shimon. The object, meaning the para, or the chamor, whatever it was, the pregnant one, used to belong to Shimon. Right? It doesn't have to be in Shimon's barn for it to belong to Shimon. It belongs to Shimon's barn. It belongs to Shimon because it belongs to Shimon. He's the title holder. So now it's grazing in the Adam, in public territory, and it gives birth there. So the animal, the vlad, is in neutral territory. Right? So the Gemara says, that's the case. The Gemara says, Shibchanami, the kind of the simta. So then the Gemara says, Vinukma, Acheska, Achazaka, to be Acheskas, to be either Chazaka de or Acheskas, Mara, Kama. Right? Right? The Hebrew? The Dictus? Will have either Chamotzi, the Chavero, all of Araya? Right? So it's fascinating. The Gemara calls Marakama when there's no physical Motzi Mechabel of Araya, because the animal's in the Sada. But he was the last known owner of the Para. This is even a bigger tradition away. The last known owner of the Para was Shimon, and this is the Para's child. So when it was an Ubar, if he belonged to Shimon as an Ubar, so there's Marakama. So the Gemara says, how many Sumchasi? So Tosus's view is, Sumchas only says, what's the root of the argument? There's a 50% chance here. Who cares about Marakama? Would he say, who cares about Motzi Mechavel of Araya? It seems in the Shaka Vatari of the Gemara, no. And that's what Tosus says here. Tosfos Mavakama disagrees. Tosfos Mavakama says, once we bring in Sumchas, it overturns the Motzei Mechon Arlo Arai in this case too.
Now I understand.
What am I trying to, what am I trying to, just one second, what am I trying to demonstrate? Here you have a case on the pure Motzei Mechon Arlo Arai where you've eliminated the Raya part, but you still have the burden of proof part. And then when you go to the Marakama part, you have Marakama, right? You don't even have the burden of physical proof. Is it still Marakama for the Chacham? The Chacham said this is based on Marakama. I'll give you the opposite example. Yeah, pursue your question.
Now I understand why the Texans brand their animals.
Be a lot, but then we wouldn't have anything to talk about. Thank God they don't, right? Otherwise, it would not be cases. Now, so let me. What's the opposite case? I'll give you two other cases just to think about. Yeah, two other cases. Just think about just the theory, and they're all concrete cases. There's a famous Gemara Bava Metzia that we're going to get to at some point. It's called Tokfakoin Motzin Miyado in Motzin Miyado. So what is that? That's a Gemara Bava. Okay, what is that really? You always hear about Tokfakoin. People are, you know, they have nightmares about Tokfakoin. Should have nightmares about it. It's something we should look forward to. But a complicated topic. Basically, Tfisa, what Tokfakoin is, in a word, is Tfisa la'achar leidas ha'safek. What does that mean? There's a dispute of some sort, and one guy, you know, takes the law in his own hand and he grabs the object, the disputed object. Tfisa, grabbing the object, la'achar leidas ha'safek, after the safek already exists. Right? These ones can make a claim of the object, and one guy says, out of my way, and he grabs
hold on.
In a way, but you know, now the question is there mukzakus? Can you create motzei mechamel levaraya where there's already a suffix?
Ex post facto.
Ex post facto. Is there an ex post facto motzei mechamel levaraya lacha letis a suffix or not? That's the whole big huge topic of talk for coin motzi and miyado or talk for coin ain motzi and miyado. Now what is that? Obviously, again, from a Raya point of view, if there's a suffix already, right, so if one guy grabs the object, you know, that doesn't prove anything, except that he's pushy, you know. But he's aggressive.
Unless he's the rush.
What?
Unless he looks like the rush.
Okay, unless I can interrupt, but I've the rush. Again, when we get to it, we'll see, you know, it's instead of context, right? But, if you know, but there was a 50-50 suffix, and now this guy's created a new reality on the ground, are you going to take it away from him because of 50-50? Can you create the burden of evidence to change, can you create status quo for the purposes of evidence burden, right, post facto or not? That's a very interesting question.
Why should you be able to?
Because the point, if the point is simply that, well, we don't know to the contrary.
I mean, you can take
Shimon
from the
Talmud
after they put it down, one guy
grabbed it. 100%. That's tomorrow's discussion on Bava Ben Aleph. Look very quickly on Bava Ben Aleph. That's exactly the Gemara's question. The Gemara's nothing. Look at Shimon from the Talmud. It's a little more complicated there. It was quiet. He wasn't quiet. But just to show you that it exists. Look on Bava Ben Aleph. And look at the two dots. Boy Rab Zera. Right? Tafa echad b'faneinu. Mahu. Shaim also betalas. And then one guy grabs it. So the Gemara says, echad dami. He the shasik. The other guy's silent. How do you? Odilei. Sounds like he's a shtika koda. He cuts off. What do you want from him? What's he supposed to do? This is what you were saying. Whatever. This particular case, already in a context of dispute, it might be a little bit different, but let's say there's an objective suffix, and there wasn't a din Torah, and there wasn't already the imminent psak, or the automatic psak of Yachloku. And then somebody said, oh, you know what, I'm going to create, what do the Israelis always say, we'll create facts on the ground. Right? Can you create facts on the ground in the context of a suffix? Is that legally significant. Again, as a raya? Not at all. But as a burden of proof? Take metalton. I'll give you one other example. And this is again from our Cheskes Amatim days a little bit. Metalton, we say, kol ma'asha takas ha'adam ha'ra'ya shalom. That's the norm. That's the rule, right? But for many, many issues, we distinguish between what we call dvarim ha'asuyin, ma'asha l'haskir, and other metalton. But it's the kind of thing that typically is changes hands, right, is lent and borrowed, or rented. So then, the fact that, you know, it is yotzei tachas yado of this fellow is significantly diluted. Again, if you ask the question about initiating change, the burden of evidence, but again, remember, it might be a dvar masuim l'hashu l'haskir, but the guy's claiming it's mine. Right? Just because something is dvar masuim l'hashu l'haskir doesn't mean it doesn't have real owners. So the fellow claims, this is my object. The other guy says, no, it's mine. Right? But the rule is that if it's dvar masuim l'hashu l'haskir, so again, in terms of burden of evidence, probably that might apply. But if you say, oh, chazaka, kol ma shetachas yadonu v'ra'yu shalom, you know, usually the things that are under people's domain are theirs, right? Let's say somebody did a survey, or that's the presumption. But obviously that's diluted, and diminished at least, when it's dvar masuim l'hashu l'haskir. If it's something that people don't lend, typically, right, and it's in the Orishus, then the great likelihood, presumption is, you know, not just in terms of initiating and then burden of proof and evidence, but in terms of, you know, the reconstruction of what likely took place here. That this is a, you know, this is your object. But you know, people, it's a lawnmower. You know, people always in the suburbs, you know, if you don't lend your lawnmower, then you're not a very good neighbor, right? So you usually don't get it back. That's something else. That, you know, it's like smart. So what? What? Yeah. So, but the point I'm trying to make is now there's no, evidentiary element to dvar masuim. I'm saying there's no, but it's certainly diluted, right? So the point is that it can be different. Now, in light of all of that. So what I'm saying is, normally, the classic Motzim Mechamer L'Rai, one person being toe-faced, Dvarim She'ena Masuim L'Hash L'Haskir, Lifnei HaSafek, has all these elements. Then we pointed out just now, oh, there could be also the Marakama, there's a Tzitzel L'Achar, there's Dvarim Masuim L'Hash L'Haskir, right? Okay. So there are only some aspects, or some of the aspects are diluted. Now, let's think about Shnayim Olsen Betalis and all in light of all of this. Here you have two people. Okay, so that you can't differentiate one from the other in terms of likelihood of Kulo Shali. I mean, each one has the exact same amount. Right? But we could still ask the question, is there any Tisa here at all? And this goes back to what we began with last week. Right? You could say, you know, based on the analysis of what's important about Tfisa, or just even objectively just looking at the structure of what's happened here, you might just say, you know what? When one person has Tfisa to the exclusion of others, that's called Tfisa. When two people are struggling over an object and each one is holding kakashta, you know, they neutralize each other. They negate each other. No one has Tfisa. And then you say Shnayim Olsen Betalis is not a, it doesn't belong in the Parsha, let's call it, of Motzim Mechaber Olav Araya. It belongs in the Parsha of Momen Amuta B'Safek. Right? There is no Tfisa, there's no Motzim Mechaber Olav Araya, they cancel each other out. The question is, what do you do? Or no, maybe that isn't how to look at it. Maybe Kol Echad Tofes B'Chetzi. The way to look at it is that each one is Kehila holding on half, and each one's holding on half, there can still be a question. Okay, but each one's holding on half of the same thing, or each one is Kehila holding on to something different. To use a phrase in the Gemara later on, we'll show how it fits in, The Gemara later on, and Daltayin says, when people are not holding the fringes of the talus, right, but one person's holding Achi Yada Magas, and the other person's holding Achi Yada Magas, the Gemara says, Zen no tell Achi Yada Magas, Zen no tell Achi Yada Magas. That's the Gemara, if you look at it on Daltayin, here, for 1 second. Very, very important Gemara. Gemara says as follows. Shnayim adukim, but Tani Rav Tachlifa, this is the middle of the page. Tani Rav Tachlifa ba Marava Kamei de Rav Abo. Shnayim adukim betalas. Everybody have that? Almost like in the middle of the page. Two people are holding on to a talas. Zen no tel ad makom shiyot magas. Zen no tel ad makom shiyot magas. Each one keeps the amount that he's holding. Zayin amad aleph. Almost in the middle of the page. Okay? Then I'll tell you. So the Gemara says, Vashar Cholkim, if this part that they're not holding on to physically, so that part will split into. So the Gemara says, Machzil Arvavo Vishvua. And you have to do this with a Shvua. That's a very controversial statement, what it refers to, whether it refers to Yonah Magas. Very important to our bigger topic, we'll get back to. Ella. So the Gemara says, Masnis and Diktani de Palgia Badadi. But the Mishnah says, Shnayim Ofen Betalas Yachloku. Here we're saying that whoever is holding on to more gets to keep more. Right? So the Gemara says, the Loktani said, no thought, Makram Shiyad Magas. So the Gemara says, Hechen Ishkakasam. What's the case of the Mishnah then? So the Gemara says, Amra Papa, Ditz Pisi, this is where I got the expression, Bekakashta. The Mishnah is talking about a case where each one's holding on to the fringes. Then the Gemara says, Omra Misharsha, Misharsha, Shema mina, Hay Sudra, Kiva the Tafis Fe Gimel Al Gimel, Karim Be Vinasum Lebeyu, the command the Pasik Dami Vakani. Out of the blue, the Gemara says, we see from here that if a man is holding on to a Sudar, a handkerchief or whatever, right, and he's holding on to Gimel Al Gimel, which is considered to be a Beged, he's holding on 3x3 Tzvakim, right, even though he's not holding on with his hand to the entire thing, the amount that he's holding in his grasp, which is 3x3, is kemad depasik. It's as if it's cut off. It's as if that is torn off of the rest of the beged. He can use that for a kinyan sudar, because there's the nasan l'reyu, the pasuk in Rus, shalah shalah fishnalo, the nasan l'reyu. So when we speak about shayim oks and betalus, the karkashta, right? If we consider that maybe each one is tofes b'chatzi. So even then we should ask ourselves, each one is tofes b'chatzi, meaning it's like our two begadim here. Like the beged is ripped in half, command the pasuk dummy. So then it's the old scenario. It's kolecha tofes legamri b'shalom. I just look that way, that people watching, they think it's one talis. They don't just don't know the halacha. Al pidin, the halachic reality is, that's command the pasuk dummy. The Gemara only says it by Yad HaMagas. The Gemara doesn't say it by Karkashta. The Rashba uses the phrase Kalechot Kilu Topes Bechetzi Ukiilu Nechlaka. And then he goes back and forth in different Gemaras. Well, is it Kilu Nechlaka or not? My point is, one extreme in Shai Moksum Betalas is to say that no one has a Tisa. Because they're competing and they cancel each other out. And it's not part of the Motzim Mechaber Halav Araya Gemaras at all. The other extreme is to say, Kol Echad Tofes Bechetzi, and not only that, but it's Kehilu Yesh Kan Shnei Begadim. You don't have to necessarily go that far. You could say it's Beged Echad, and there are some consequences of that. In between these two extremes, we might also consider two other models, right? We might consider the possibility that both of them together are Tofes, the whole thing. There is Tfisa, but it's almost like a shutfis, a joint tfisa biyachad. Now, if it's a joint tfisa biyachad and they're struggling with each other, right, how much is it going to help them? It's not going to help them to the extent that a single exclusive tfisa helps one person. But didn't we just see that there are different models even within tfisa itself? Dharma sumash lahaskir, tfisa lachar safek, marakama, without Motsu Mechavera Levaraya, Motsu Mechavera Levaraya without the Raya aspect of it, because it's Dror de Mamona. So maybe some aspects of Tfisa, vis-a-vis the rest of the world, for example, they're not considered Basimta, it's considered like this Tfisa. But it's a joint Tfisa together. Or taking another leaf from the world of Shutfas, right? So the Shutfas is a consensual thing. It's something which is created by the parties. So this might be different. But in the world of Shutfas, we sometimes consider Kolechad, either Kolechad b'chetzi, or Sam b'yachad b'kol, or Kolechad b'kol. But there are two of them. Right? If it ever comes to dividing the pie is not going to, you know, it's not going to magnify into two. But Kolechad, Yeshlo, Tfisa, b'kol. Right? Is that a possibility for Shimon? So what I'm going to try to show in the next couple of Ashurim is the different perspectives in Shimon for the Talis, these four or so perspectives, and what they impact. Are we dealing with Kol Echa Tosis Bechetzi? I read the language of Tosis, I'll just read it again, just to read it off, just to let you know. This is Tosis' distinction with Kol Dalam Gavar. We'll use the Rambam next time, because I need, Rambam has a very important sheet on this. If you look at the first Tosis, Biachloku, Tosis says, Tema, Maishna Ma'ida Arba, some are called Alam Gabar. How come the Gemara Baba Basra? We say, let the whoever is more powerful win the case. So it says, Ishlamar, the oak is in shiny, because when two people are holding on, that's different. In what way? Now our antennae are up. What? Just that you won't say Kol Alam Gabar. Or Kolecha Tofis Bakol, Shneim Yachad Tofsim Bakol. Or is it Kolecha Tofis Bakatsi? And there'll be huge nafkamina. The Tosa says, Yeshlamar, the oaks and shiny, the choshev, ki ilu, kol echad, yeshlo ba, bevadai, hachetzi. We consider here as if each one is vadai, that's a key word, not safek, even though it is a safek, because each one's claiming the other one's a liar. But we treat it as if each one has a tfisa. Anansadi is a very strong term. This comes from a Gemara. We'll have to see how the other people read the Gemara. The Gemara in Gimel Abed Aleph. Anansadi, we are witness. We testify. The might, the toughest. Hi, Nideyu. What's that? Almost equivalent of what phrase? Chazaka. It's the application of Chazaka. Koma shetachas yad adam. Hareyu shalom. But in a case where there are two people competing, and each in half a talus. Huge kiddush that not everybody agrees with.
Even though they're only
b'kakashah. So we'll continue next week.